Riprendiamo i lavori, per favore. E la parola è alla professoressa Donato, che ci presenterà un po' il quadro della situazione della ricerca nell'area del Nord Centro America.
And I just move the slide like this. Como whatever I move it. Ah. Okay, like that. Okay, and then go back. Okay, perfect. Okay.
It's okay?
Oh,
No.
thank you. Yeah, it goes down. So maybe here. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you to everybody for being here, and thank you for this invitation. I'll start just with one slide of context, but of course, based on the earlier presentations, we know that the context could take the entire half hour. So since 2000, we're seeing growing numbers of migrants, refugees, asylum seekers all around the world. At the end of 2023, 117 million people were counted by the UN Agency for Refugees as forcibly displaced. And you can see the numbers there, many more internally displaced, but still sizable numbers of refugees, more than in the past, 7 million asylum seekers, 6 million of people who are could be in need of protection. And so we have many more people on the move. In the United States, we are seeing record numbers. Throughout the Americas, we are seeing record numbers of people. So I'm not going to review those numbers, but suffice it to say that the Americas has never looked more dynamic with respect to migration than it is currently. And it's migration from people, you know, people, Venezuelans coming from the Americas, but it's also people coming from all over the world, Afghanistan, Cameroon, Ukraine, and coming up through the Americas to get to the US. So with more people on the move, there are definitely more migration research centers, and they've emerged throughout the US, Canada, and throughout the Americas, although you'll see far less in the Americas that I'm going to talk about, which is Mexico and Northern Central America. Okay, why that did that, but let's try that. Okay. So I am doing, my talk is taking, the logic of my talk is the reverse than the two talks before me, because I started by mapping out the centers and thinking about what the migration research centers are doing, saying, funding, and then so throughout this, you're going to see this mapping, and then I will talk about emphases, right? What the actual research, where the research is moving. And maybe some of these research centers don't actually map onto where you know, some of the trends and some of the newest data suggest. So a few caveats. Number one, I use the word centers, institutes interchangeably. And I do that, which is a big problem if you go on any US university campus, because centers have meanings that is different from a program, and it all has to do with funding and where the place is situated. But centers, institutes, all those words mean the same thing for this talk. The second is, really broadly speaking, there are two types. There are think tanks, and these think tanks are extremely influential, and we'll start there. But then, of course, there are many international migration research centers. And all, I'm not going to emphasize the fact that they're multidisciplinary, because all of them are, or all of them claim to be, And I think you'll see some of them certainly emphasize one discipline more than another, but all of them claim to be. So I want to start with think tanks because it's extremely difficult now to understand the state of migration research in the United States without understanding these think tanks. Now, there are many think tanks, but I'm emphasizing the two largest in the United States. And if you can read the little bit of text there, you'll see that, you know, there's Migration Policy Institute, and there is the Center for Immigration Studies. They're both in Washington, and they essentially often take the same kinds of data and spin it in completely opposite directions. So it shouldn't be a surprise if you know that, to then read that the mission of the Center for Immigration Studies seeks to provide policymakers, other people, information about the effects of legal and illegal immigration with a pro-immigrant but low immigration profile. So that's the contrast there. In comparison to the Migration Policy Institute, which is, they're both, by the way, equally active. You can, if you sign up for their listservs, you will get articles, research. Sometimes it's a few pages, sometimes it's a 30-page paper that really digs deep. You can get this every day from both of these think tanks. So they're extremely competitive. They're flowing, you know, information's being put out all the time. So the Migration Policy Institute describes itself as seeking to improve immigration and integration through research and analysis, learning opportunities. So all of that is in the Center for Immigration mission statement, but then dialogue. And so, and then the Center for Immigration adds this pro-immigrant but low immigration vision. Both of these think tanks are independent. They both argue they're bipartisan. I don't see any bipartisanship here. But they're really important centers of research. Now, do they do the kind of research that I do? No, because I'm a deep kind of geeky researcher, nerdy. I dig in. I really want to understand what it is I'm studying. But they do a fair amount of not only volume of work, and like I said, there is breadth as well in their work. They are driving, these two think tanks are really driving the narrative in a broad way, beyond the research committee. And they're really pushing to drive it every minute. And then in Canada, again, in the US there are smaller think tanks, but in Canada, sort of the biggest one, people tell me, is the Canadian Institute for Identities and Migration. And what a different name that is, which actually, I think, signals the way that the nature of migration research and the lack of fear or the ability to deal with identities and migration in the same sentence and maybe in the same title of a research paper. Now, of course, I wanted to then do, and I did go and try to compare think tanks in Mexico and Northern Central America. You know, if you come from a big wealthy country, you might presume that other countries do things in similar ways. So I started really looking into the think tanks in the countries that I'm covering outside of US and Canada. And really, you can't, it's not an apples to apples comparison. I'll say that in the written paper that I'll write, but for several reasons that you see here. Number one, the foreign policy circle is narrower than in the US, than in Canada, meaning there's a president, there are a few people around the president, and they are dictating foreign policy. That's what I think is going on as the US, for example, continues to do what Frontex is doing in Europe. The US is constructing a system that goes from north all the way down to south to control people from coming up to the US border. And to now recently, with the recent Panama announcement just last week, with the new Panamanian government president, the deportation of many people who come through the Daria. So not letting them move forward. And that's with US money, right? So the US is developing a Frontex without formally having a America's Union, let's say. So the foreign policy circle is very narrow. I have repeatedly asked over the course of my career for documents to share with me the agreement. What is the agreement that the U.S. signed with Panama to give all this money to deport people? Can I read it? What about the U.S.? Those documents are not to be found. Maybe some historian 20 or 50 or 100 years from now will be able to uncover them, but they're not to be found. For people like me, at least. Fewer people are committed in a number of the countries south of the U.S. border. They're committed, they're fewer of them are committed to advancing a foreign policy agenda, just in terms of the public generally. And then, you know, you cannot be an MPI, Migration Policy Institute, or a CIS, Center for Immigration Studies in the U.S., without a whole lot of money. And think tanks, you know, definitely need more money. And in these countries, there are fewer funding options. This one? Okay, I got it. Okay, so here is what I've been able to uncover. I have a few emails out to people who might know more in Mexico, so we'll see if this is all I report in the article or if there's a bit more to say. There are a few think tanks in Northern Central America. They are not strong. They're there to have websites, but they are think tanks not on migration, not on immigration. They're think tanks on social, broadly speaking, social issues of the day, and migration is covered there. And then the El Salvador think tank that used to have a live link, no longer has a live link. I know the man who ran that, and I've now sent him an email. El Salvador is a country not quite like Nicaragua in this moment, but it's compromised. It's getting more difficult for many people to be there and to express their opinions and their knowledge about migration. So we shouldn't assume that think tanks operate around the world, and in fact, they don't. So if we go to the research centers, I'm going to start by talking about research centers in the U.S. I count 13. I may have missed one or two. So between 12 and 15, and I'll do another check before I send the piece into you. They vary by types of research, as you can imagine. They also themselves have different impacts. You'll see some centers really focus around the expertise of the director. Those tend to be smaller ones. And many are relatively new, within 10 years, relatively new. And so you can see the Global Migration Center at UC Davis, the Center for Forced Displacement at Boston University, the Zollberg Center at the New School. These are 10 years old at best, some of them literally 3 years old, 4 years old. And only one center, which is the one I'm affiliated with, has an MA program. So let's just... I know you can't read this. I'm not going to read it either, but I am going to point out a few things, and I'm going to give you just tables like this of the centers to say, for example, in the very first row, the Global Migration Center that was developed with UC, University of California system funding. I reviewed that proposal, so it did get funded. It really operates around one economist, who does economics of immigration. Who?
Phil Martin.
No, no, no. Phil Martin. Okay, you're right. Phil Martin is there, and Phil has been longstanding, right? But he's retired. I thought you were going to say who the economist is Giovanni Perry. Yeah, but he has been at UC Davis now for quite some time, and I think and the university gave this to him is how I see it. He's a very smart guy. He really is passionate about immigration. He does not want to talk about the border. So anything you see from the UC Davis Global Migration Center will not talk about the border. He has told me repeatedly, we've been in conferences together, the border is too complex, right? So he thinks about the flows of workers, the authorization of those workers, you know, the industries where people are, the origins where people come from, the destinations. And he has developed some interesting policies, policy ideas that have yet to be implemented. So he does write policy briefs. His center has migrant narratives, but there's a lot of work being done on the economics of immigration and migration, training students from that perspective, from his perspective. The Institute for the Study of International Migration is the institute that I'm affiliated with. That's at Georgetown. Supported by the School of Foreign Service. Here we have a much broader take on in terms of research, and that's partly because we don't get full funding. So we are constantly writing grant proposals, generating proposals and funding to study the topics that we're interested in. So internal displacement, Syrian refugees in Turkey right now, working with UNHCR Mexico on a integration program, moving people from the southern border by Guatemala up to northern cities where there are jobs, unaccompanied children and how they move through the Americas. We even have a very a big data project where I'm working with a computer scientist and a statistician on trying to develop indirect signals for forced migration before people are actually out of their countries. The Center for Forced Displacement, this is actually a very, I think, great illustration of just how multidisciplinary we have become, this field. The Center for Forced Displacement, which is funded by Boston University, only open for a few years, is run by an engineer. Now, who would have thought that the multidisciplinary that we're talking about would go into engineering? But he's a very serious engineer who is extremely passionate about migrants and refugees. And he has organized a group of engineers to deal with, first to teach engineering students about migrants and about the systems that migrants and engineers kind of go through, to hopefully develop new ways of thinking and new systems. There are humanities faculty, there are social scientists as well, but I'm just saying that an engineer runs it, which is very unusual. And then we have the Zolberg Institute, which is at the New School, and that is an institute that has some humanities faculty, but it's got a very strong tie to the legal issues of the day with respect to visas and how people, asylum, and how people come in. There are several centers that are developed by historians. So the emphasis there is on the historical experience. One at the University of Minnesota, which has a very large archive of letters that migrants and refugees have written to each other over the last 200 years. There's quite a collection of letters, by the way, of Italian migrants who moved to the United States and elsewhere. The Center for Migration and Development, which is at Princeton, which does not really fund any research, but it is a platform for faculty across Princeton to be part of in order to share their research. And they have, you know, they've done a lot of work in the last 30 years on the U.S.-Mexico border through Doug Massey, and also the children of immigrants and their trajectories moving forward through Alejandro Portes, both of whom have just both of whom are now retired. So that is a center that I wonder how that will become remade in the future. Same is true for the Berkeley Interdisciplinary Migration Initiative. The leader of that, they call it BIMI, has just moved to the University of British Columbia outside of Vancouver. And that institute, well, they now have a much bigger migration studies and migration research institute, Irene Bloomberg. So it's not clear what will happen there. And then you can see UCLA, the Fletcher School. The Fletcher School, like where I am, is a school of international relations. The Fletcher School emphasizes practice as well as research, so they provide opportunities for students to go around the world. And then there are the very first one listed here, which is Migration's a Global Grand Challenge. It actually has a pretty robust website, but when you look at it, it looks like they're phasing out because the last funded round of projects, they got a lot of money from the Mellon Foundation right around COVID to develop this center. They funded a lot of research. Some of it is on Indigenous peoples and migration in the northeastern part of the U.S. Other projects were on work and immigrant participation in unions. But now I think that might be phasing down. And then you can see, in addition, there are three MA programs in addition to the institute where I am, where we're welcoming our first cohort of graduate students in the fall. There are three other MA programs in the US. I say that I bring this up because people in Europe has more than 30 master's programs in refugees or migrants or both. Okay, so in Canada. So in Canada, you'll see there is a lot more emphasis on the social, a lot more emphasis on identity and ethnicity. And all of these, the British, you know, the UBC, York University, the University of Ottawa, and probably the biggest one right now is at the Toronto Metropolitan University, it's not only the largest, but they have the named professor, the endowed professor on international migration there. And they're doing a lot. They're doing probably everything more than any other center. And you can see two MA programs. So like ISUM, where I am, we're interested in governance, we're interested in labor migration, but they also can dig in, especially the center and the Canadian centers more generally, can dig in more into the politics without feeling like there could be repercussions, which is how most people in the US feel. And then in Mexico, you have three large centers. You have others, of course, but three large centers: the Colegio de México, the Colegio de la Frontera Norte, and el Colegio de la Frontera Sur. And that's partly because there are now big survey data collection projects associated with those universities, and they have stepped up in a big way. And unfortunately, we only see one for, I know you can't quite see it, but for Guatemala, in Flaxo, Guatemala, there's a small migration. So the mapping exercise reveals many new centers for international migration research, covering a lot of the same topics that most migration researchers in the U.S. would want covered, but some are likely not to exist or not to grow, and some are likely to disappear in the next decade or so. The more we remain entrenched, as the first two speakers pointed out, in the they versus us, in the divide across the political spectrum, the more some of these places will disappear. And the end of private foundation in the US, these centers existed partly because there was private foundation for center funding, not for an individual project, but for center funding. That funding is gone. So unless you can get private donor funding and university funding and external funds, you're not going to be here. Some centers have a very narrow foci, others are broad, and some include instruction and learning. Thank you.
Grazie, professoressa Donato. Mentre si prepara il